on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, October 19th edition of InvestTalk, and we are here to answer your questions, give you a fresh perspective on this new week. And this program is all about making the right money choices that pay off in the long run, and they pay off in better gains on your invested dollars and hopefully more confidence in making smart choices to protect your assets and grow your assets. And that's the first order of business, responding to the current economics and market dynamics that we face today. They're ever changing, but you have to be aware of them and take them into account when you are making decisions. Even anticipating movements that should cause you to adjust your strategy. You know, understanding the underlying trends and fundamentals of the markets and individual companies is very important. Now, there are a lot of ways to make money in the market. There's tons of asset classes and vehicles to make money, but that also means that there's tons of risks and things to look out for and things to educate yourself about all these different asset classes and investment vehicles. Now, there are all types of investors as well and speculators that play a part in creating this investment landscape. There are traders who are in and out constantly. There are momentum investors who ride the waves. You have growth investors who search for the exciting story of the next big hot company to come out of Silicon Valley or elsewhere. There are income investors who look for dividends and interest payouts to support themselves maybe in retirement. Then there are deep value investors who are constantly searching for the bargains that are out there. You know, the assets that the rest of the market is kind of panned and left for dead. And it's become overly pessimistic. There are those investors that look for those opportunities as well. And all of them can be successful if they take the right approach. So there's not just one way to skin a cat, as they like to say. All types of investing can be successful, but you need to decide what type of investor you are based on your needs and temperament. And then hone your skills around that particular strategy. Understanding balance sheets and cash flows, you know, that's going to help if you're a dividend investor or a value investor. But that's not really going to help you if you're a day trader or a momentum trader, or even if you're a growth investor. Right? And if you are a day trader or a momentum investor, you need to understand the technicals, the chart. Something that is still, I think, somewhat important, but less important if you're a dividend investor, per se. So understanding what type of investor you are and gathering the knowledge to execute it properly are very, very important. So that's what we are here to help you with, and that's why we solicit your calls. Because we want to know what type of investor you're trying to be and ways that we can guide you to be a better type of investor, whatever type of investor that is. Now, you've heard us talk about value investors many times. And what does that mean to be a value investor? First, you have to be a contrarian usually. Meaning when everyone hates a particular asset class, you get excited to find some bargains. Jason and I in our office think we found one today that we're looking at. Why? Because everyone is painting part of their business, but they're ignoring the other part of their business. And this is what you have to do as a value investor. See where the market is throwing the baby out with the bathwater, shall we say, and swooping in and finding that great bargain. And you have to understand why everyone hates something and find ways to either validate their opinion or invalidate that line of thinking, whatever that is. You have to know the numbers. You have to be able to analyze a company, analyze an industry. Now, the job of a value investor is to keep your expectations grounded in reality and expect the historical norms. It may not play out for you right away. But if your analysis is correct, it will play out over time, and that's what's most important. Now, assets tend to trade above or below their value. Rarely are they trade right at their value. And you need, remember, I always talk about the market's like a pendulum. It goes back and forth. It sways from one extreme to another. And it's rarely at the fulcrum of that pendulum, right? It's really right in the middle. And if it is, it's just passing the middle to on its way to the other side. So you need to find when the pendulum will soon start to swing the other way. And that takes some skill and some experience. And it's not exactly timing the market, but it's understanding extremes. And knowing that we're a lot closer to the pendulum swinging back the other way than we are staying in that direction. And that's where you really can make hay. Now, being a value investor is hard. It's not easy. Because it usually goes against the grain. Usually, the best value stocks aren't ones that are talked about by media, you know, on Cramer or on Yahoo Finance or CNBC. It's rare that they're talked about. And if they are, they're probably talked about very negatively. So that means you have to shun the manias that engulf your friends and family and chasing the assets that are most unloved. Most unloved by the public, mainly. Now, like I said, timing is always difficult. But if you stay the course and you have the right analysis, the right process, the odds are high that you'll come out ahead over time. And understanding history of that company or of that sector or asset class is extremely important. And when I say history, I'm not talking about 3-5 years. I'm talking 30 or 50 years. Even 100 years. So what type of investor are you? It's time to check in with your question, and hopefully I have an answer. So bring your questions or opinions to us now at 888-99-CHART. Let's take a quick question that came in before the live show from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, this is Dick calling from Sacramento. I've got you on podcast. I was just wondering about these moving averages, you know, 5, 50 days, 100, 200 days. How do you know which average to use? Everyone seems to be talking about 50-day, 100, 200-day moving average. How would you apply that to, let's say, a long-term growth stock of J&J? I was just wondering about, not sure how to use these moving averages, but everyone talks about it. Maybe you can give us some fundamentals and basics on what we should be using. Thank you for your help.
All right, he's asking about moving averages, and that's a technical term. Obviously, it's the average, right, of whatever the stock is trading at over the long, over that period of time. So 20 days is the average of where that stock closed over the last 20 days. 50-day moving average is where that the average of the close of that stock over the last 50 days and so on. You get 100-day, 200-day, right? Now, the longer the moving average, the slower it will move because one-day movement isn't going to affect it that much. As opposed to a 20-day moving average, it will, right? One day can move that average more dramatically than, let's say, a 200-day. And he asked about Johnson & Johnson. I wouldn't know if I call Johnson & Johnson a growth stock. At this point, it's a value dividend play, so I know he referred to it as a growth stock. I wouldn't go that far. But that is a decent example to look at. You always want to look at the longest moving average first. That's the most important. What direction is it moving in? And I also like to look at weekly and monthly moving averages. Right? My two favorite moving averages are the 50-day and the 100-day. The 200-day is very good to understand broader trends. But it can jump around those pretty quickly, or around the 200-day pretty quickly, and it is support for to an extent. But I like the 50 and the 100-day most of all. Though if it's trading above the 50 and the 100-day, I'm usually pretty bullish on the name, at least in the near term. If it's below the 50 and the 100-day, that's when I really start to get weary. So that's how I would use moving averages. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. I want to hear your comments and questions today. A new info sheet went out last week to all our InvestTalk insiders. It's called Leading Economic Indicators, watching for signs of weakness in the economic cycles before a recession is important to the investor. And to do that, there are leading economic indicators that point the way. Now, when you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access to these informational sheets and a lot more. So sign up. It's free on investtalk.com.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each weekday by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. One piece of your retirement portfolio can often be overlooked when managing your investments. It's your home. That's why KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the important decisions about your home and your retirement. To learn more about all of KPP Financial investment programs, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're just getting started in this hour, but it does go by quickly. So if you have a question for us, dial that number and get your question in sooner rather than later. Now let's take a quick look at what we're going to discuss today. Our main talking point is how to invest your 401k. I know a lot of people have trouble with that, understanding the ins and outs, but I'm going to go over some basics. We talk about this regularly because so many people do have a 401k, but it's the number one savings vehicle that most people have, and making sure it's invested properly is very important. So we're going to talk about that on this Monday edition of Invest Talk. I also want to touch on retail sales that came out last week. What is that telling us about the American consumer? And is it looking positive, negative, or neutral? And then tying that to the jobs report. The jobs report and there's a recent report last week and then the last week that gave some indication of how strong the jobs market is. So I want to get to that. And also, QE. There's been some issues with QE and its effectiveness and what the Fed's going to do. So I'm going to talk about that and why this is becoming an issue and why QE and lower interest rates isn't really having the desired effect that I think investors wanted or the Fed wanted. So we're going to talk about that as well and hopefully whatever's on your mind. I have more topics I can get to, but really it's all about you. All right. So let's take a quick look on today's market. The Dow closed up 15 points, the Nasdaq closed up 18, and the S&P closed up a whopping 1 point. So it was a very modest up day after a solid positive week last week. The economic numbers were very mild today. Housing index came in pretty high, highest it's been in many, many years. So the housing sector is acting very bullish, or at least the CEOs are very bullish about their prospects. And that was really the only economic number coming out today. Now, our InvestTalk number is 888-99-CHART. You can join us right now. I'd love to talk with you. This is InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. It's designed as an ETF of ETFs, but its high expense ratio makes it less than ideal for long-term investors. Should you avoid this new fund of funds ETF? That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So let's talk quickly about how to invest your 401k. I get these questions all the time from clients, from listeners, friends and family. And that's one reason why we launched our 401k solution, is because we've had so many questions about this. And it applies to so many people. Now, clearly, you're better off putting your cash to work inside of 401k. Now, you can just put it in cash, money market, stable value funds. Those are usually available to the participants in a 401k plan. But in the long run, you're better off putting your cash to work. But the big question is how? Now, just like you wouldn't put all your savings in cash, you wouldn't put all of it in an IPO, for example. Right? That's just way too risky. So first you have to decide how much risk are you comfortable with. Some people are risk averse, meaning they're conservative in nature. Some are okay with big market gyrations and because in the knowing that in the long run you're going to have bigger returns. Now the younger you are, the better odds you have of being able to handle those market fluctuations. But that doesn't mean that just because you're young, you should be aggressive. That's what a lot of people will say. Well, you're young, you can put up stocks. Well, the problem is that many people get uncomfortable with volatility. So you have to ask yourself, if the market went down 50%, which happens, meaning the stock market went down 50%, would you be able to stomach that if you were all in stocks and your account went down 50%? Even knowing that the long run, 10, 15 years from now, you're gonna make that pretty much all back and more. But some people freak out and they just can't handle it. Would you make the mistake and sell and panic? Think about what you thought about in the market in 08. Did you ignore it? And you're like, oh, whatever, it's gonna come back and you're good. Or were you freaking out and thought the world was going to end? If you're the former, you can probably take more risk. If you're the latter, you need to have some sort of balanced portfolio. So you have to weigh your investment options. Now, you're probably going to have a list of funds to invest in. It could be U.S. large cap stocks, small cap stocks, international stocks, emerging market stocks. I'm talking about funds, right? Funds that invest in these type of stocks. You might have alternative funds as well, like natural resources or real estate. So spreading that out is important as well. It's not all stocks are created equal. And it's good to have a diverse mix because you will have better returns with less volatility over time. And then there's bonds, bond selections. You could have a general total bond market fund or international bonds. So you could have specific, you know, PIMCO total return fund as well. And you could have a high yield bond fund. So you're going to have some diversity in choices. And that's always good to diversify as well. But understanding that mix and what's conservative, what's moderate, what's aggressive is very, very important as well. And that's when you should, if you can't understand that, you can't get a grasp on that, hopefully you have the option in your 401k to outsource that to a financial advisor. Maybe using models, model portfolios. That's really where the industry is going. Model portfolios targeting risk. And that's what we do for our 401k solutions. So if hopefully you have that option in your 401k. And if you don't, give us a call. Get us in touch with your HR, head of HR, your CFO, CEO, whoever, and we can make something happen. Now we're here for you, beginner or experienced investor at 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can leave your question with us, and we'll answer on the next program.
Hi, guys. This is Gary. I listen to your show on podcasts, and I'm calling from Massachusetts today. I'd like to thank you for all your information all year long. And my question today is about Freeport Macroman. Their symbol is FCX. I'd like to know if now is a good entry point and what you think your valuation could be a year out. Thank you once again. Take care. Bye.
All right. He's looking at Freeport MacMoran. This is one of the largest copper and gold miners in the world. They mine copper, gold, silver, molybdenum in Indonesia, North and South America. Yields at 1.7%. It's gone down dramatically with the whole copper and price of gold and silver as well. The commodity collapse has really hurt them dramatically. And I like your thinking. This is that contrarian investor type of idea. And that's why I like it. Now, they have cut their dividend recently, so you know, that's always a little bit of a worry, but that's a good thing, I think. In the long run, that's a good thing. And they're losing a lot of money, but they're restructuring. Their debt isn't too bad, but it is getting up there a little bit. So it is high risk because of the fluctuations in commodity prices, and if gold and silver and copper continue to go lower, then this will go lower. So it's all going to be dependent on that. But we think the gold and silver markets are turning around. So that's why I like it in the long term. I'm not quite sure it's turning around in the near term. I think it's working its way that way. But in the long run, I think you'll do well with it. This is Invest Talk. I'm here to help you if I can reach the half hour mark. So give me a call, 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-9888. 992-4278. There we go. That's the number to get through and ask your question. We have about 25 minutes left in the show to get your call in. So do it sooner rather than later. So let's talk a little bit about some economic numbers that have come out recently. First is a retail sales report for September, and it missed. It came out last week. And not only did it miss to the downside, but August sales were also revised lower. So you're seeing a slight deceleration in retail sales, and this isn't that worrying of a sign so far. It's more of a cooling than really a deep freeze, because if you look at the discretionary spending categories of retail sales, such as restaurants and bars, sporting goods, hobby items, furniture, furnishings, they actually showed decent gains. Now, the headline sales rose 0.1% compared to the expectations of 0.2%. So that was that miss. And then August was downgraded from 0.2% growth to flat. Now, there's a significant decline in gasoline purchases, obviously, because of weaker gas prices. And that was at minus 3.2%. But ex-gasoline retail sales rose 0.4% in September versus August of 0.2%. So it actually was pretty decent, but this is a decent. But if you look at those and you're like, okay, that's not too bad, but if you look at July sales, a 0.8%, you can see that deceleration in retail sales, and that is another quiver in the Fed's hat to keep interest rates steady, not raise them by the end of the year. Now, they still are talking about, I know one of the Fed officials came out today and said, in the near future. They didn't say, and that's a very subjective term, right? What's near? Is that for next year, next 6 months, next 2 months, 3 months? What's near? So they talked about that. He does think that they're going to raise it in the near future, but clearly there are some things that are worrying the Fed. And one of those as well is the JOLTS report. Okay, and the JOLTS report reflects job openings and layoffs. And job openings fell 5.3% in August. 5.3% in August, job openings. So clearly that's not good. There was a 2.6% rise in layoffs, another worrying sign. And there was a 0.3% gain in hires. So you're seeing that the job openings are falling and there's an increase in layoffs and a very slight increase in hires. And the amount of quits meaning people quitting, fell to 56.6% of the labor force, or the jobs that were lost, right? Because they can be lost by being fired or laid off or by quitting. And that fell to 56.6% from 57.1%. So a lower portion of the jobs that were people had left for some reason was because they quit as opposed to being laid off. So that's not good. And the jobs numbers overall continue to decelerate. We're now, over the last 3 months, on average for job gains below the 200,000 mark. And that's down from about 260,000 on average in 2014. Okay, so actually for the full year so far in 2015, we're below the 200 mark. And in the last 3 months, we're at 167,000 new jobs. So there's a marked deceleration in job creation. And that is something that the Fed watches like a hawk. No pun intended. Actually, pun intended. Let's go to Ziggy in Fremont. How you doing, Ziggy?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for raising my call.
No problem. Thanks for making
I have a question about a stock. It's called Hasbro, mm-hmm. and the symbol is HAS. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
Well, it had a pretty bad day today, and I'm trying to figure out why that is. Was that a earnings report? Do you know?
Yes. Yeah, today was the earnings report.
Yep.
Earnings were a little bit down, but with the currency adjustment, mm-hmm. they were up about 9%.
9%. Okay. Well, yeah, I see that. It looks like 8% was the growth in earnings,
yeah.
And taking out those currency adjustments, and that's what our system shows. But also, even if you take out the currency adjustment, their sales were flat, and this is a good example of how a company can have just a decent growth rate. You know, the past year or so, sales were growing in the mid to high single digit range. Right, and earnings were growing in the, I want to say, 20% range over that time frame as well. And just this last quarter, sales were flat, earnings were up only 8%. And that wasn't too terrible, but it's a lot lower than what you saw previously. And so that's a deceleration in growth. And the almost always when there's a deceleration in growth, even if there is growth, the stock will get hit, and especially a stock that's trading at a P ratio in the mid-20s, which is historically pretty high for it. So that's why it got hit. The market's saying, well, if it's only growing very modestly, I'm not going to pay 25 times earnings, right? So it's going to be hit because of that, and that's what you saw happen.
So what do you see is a support level or the next buying opportunity, or should it be sold at this point?
Well, there is some support at the 70 level, but it's gone there twice and bounced, which makes me a little weary. I would say this is probably going to the 100 week moving average, and that's going to be in the low 60s, and it's in the low 70s now. So I think that's your first support is 70, but that's now fairly weak in my opinion. I think you're almost assured to get to about the 68 level, and that's about the 50-week moving average, and I think it's very likely that it's also going to go to the 100-week moving average, and that's in the low 60s. So I think there's a good amount of downside from here, and I don't see a ton of upside for it because you're making lower highs, and it looks like it probably is going to make a lower low as well. So I would be weary, and I don't like the valuation. With a modest growth rate, a lot of the positivity has been built into this stock. They have a good amount of debt, high PE ratio. While it's still a good company, I think a lot of the recent gains got ahead of itself, and I would think there's more downside in the short to medium term than upside.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. That was Hasbro. HAS is the symbol. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. We're going to talk about the four keys to successful investing. Now the first one is no surprise. And you'd expect me to say diversity. Diversify is very important to diversify. Stocks, bonds, cash, real estate, and other investments as well. They all have their own place and time and in everyone's portfolio. And everybody should have different weightings depending on their needs and goals. Some protect against inflation and others provide the growth or income you might need for those specific goals. Plus, their prices move at different speeds in different directions, sometimes in opposite directions, which can limit volatility, which is very important. Now, this one often gets forgotten, is to rebalance. Rebalancing requires nothing more complicated than reviewing your investments annually to make sure that the percentages you hold in each investment class have not strayed wildly away from your original goals. And that can mean in asset classes or specific investments as well. Usually, when something goes up in price for an extended period of time, it's future expectations for returns is actually lower. People don't realize that because over time it will adjust to its mean. And if it's going up in excess to its mean, meaning its average return over time, that means it's getting away from its midpoint on a long-term perspective. So understanding that is key to rebalancing. And then there's dollar cost averaging. And if you're contributing to a 401k plan, you've probably already experienced how to dollar cost average. And if you receive a windfall, averaging keeps you from putting all of your money into an investment at an inopportune time, meaning chasing returns. And it forces you to bravely keep buying even if the market tumbles. You know, I talked about if a certain asset class goes up and up and up for an extended period of time, the future expected returns are going to be lower. The opposite is true on the downside. If you have any asset class or any stock going down and down and down for an extended period of time, as long as the fundamentals of that particular company are intact, then the expected return going forward actually should be higher. Most people don't look at it that way. But if you study history, it absolutely is true. Let that sink in. Understand that. Now, finally, keep costs down. It's hard to gauge ahead of what your investments will earn, but investment costs are something you know in advance and can control. So that's important as well. And that's Invest Talk 101. You can read more about these basics of investing. Just look for the link on investtalk.com under today's talking point right there.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. And now KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices when it comes to decisions about your home. And of course, KPP has a range of investment programs to suit different life situations and goals. Visit InvestTalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
Let's go to Daniel in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Daniel?
Justin, thank you. I just had a quick question about Netflix. Mm-hmm. If I could just buy, hold, sell. It seems to be really getting into the movie business on its own.
Okay. Sell. That's an easy one. Netflix has a very large user base, and they are expanding internationally. My problem is they're not doing it profitably. And in the long run, I don't think they can be profitable. And they've already started to realize what they need to do, and they need to raise prices, and they just announced that. They're going to raise the monthly fee for new users, starting very soon. I don't know if they've done it already. And then actually that's going to go up for everybody later next year. A lot of people don't realize that, because they need to be able to monetize their content. And while they're, monetize their user base. Because they have a very large user base, but in relation to the cost of the content that they have, and in relation to the cost of producing new content, which they have with the House of Cards and Narcos that they're producing, and they're both might be good shows. It costs a lot to create that content, and their revenue compared to the big cable companies, etc., is much smaller. Even though their user base is about the same size, their revenue from that user base is dramatically lower. I'm talking 10 to 20% of what the big cable companies are getting. So I'm not bullish on their profitability long term. There's gonna be more competition from the likes of Amazon Prime, from Hulu, and think of HBO Go, HBO Now that's starting to come out. There's gonna be more and more choices for cord cutters. And I think cord cutting is here to stay, and I do believe that the cable companies are in trouble, and Netflix naturally is a beneficiary of that, but they're not the only ones that are going to benefit. So the fact that you're paying a massive multiple, almost 300 PE on this stock, is just really crazy. And I think it's extremely overvalued. And I would much rather short it. Not saying you should short it, but if I was going to pick one of the two, 100% I would go with short it.
Gotcha, man. Okay.
Do you own it or are looking to buy it? What?
I bought some today. I've made a little profit. I think I'm going to put it to a very tight stop and, get out.
Okay. Sounds good, Daniel. Thanks for calling. That was Netflix. Okay, NFLX is the symbol. Great company, horrible price. Bottom line, great company, horrible price. And it's probably a company that's on my watch list, but it'd have to go down a lot for me to buy it. And I mean a lot. So understanding the value that you're getting. A lot of people get caught up in stories and recent price trends. And they ignore the underlying business and the competitive landscape of the industry. And I think Netflix investors are doing that. And the market is doing that with Netflix. And I think there's a lot more downside to Netflix at this point than there is upside. Now, maybe time for a review of your retirement accounts. Each month, Steve schedules a day or two to visit one of our satellite offices in California. He'll be in San Jose, November 11th. Less than a month away for a day of one-to-one meetings with listeners who would like him to review their retirement portfolios. Times are set on a first-come, first-served basis, so go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left, so give me a call if you have a question. Let's talk a little bit about QE and low interest rates and its desired effect. Now, there's some difference of opinions that are coming out publicly between the Fed presidents, and this is pretty rare. Usually they keep the message consistent between each member of the Federal Reserve Board, but Stanley Fischer came out and said that later this year he thinks they're going to raise rates, which is confirming what Janet Yellen has been saying. But then there's Fed President Brainard and Tarullo, who both are on the board as well, and they think they should wait until next year because they haven't seen any signs of inflation. Now, Congress gives the Fed two jobs. One is to keep inflation predictable and unemployment low. And in the past, as unemployment went down, inflation went up. But that's not really happening now. The last 7 years of Fed policy haven't worked that way. And the reason is because Fed, they can't tell the banks how to lend. Only thing they control is the interest rate, right? By moving money around in the economy. Now, by lowering rates and doing QE, it encouraged people to buy houses and businesses to borrow for expansion, right? That's the idea of it. But the problem is it's hard to measure how much of this easing, right, monetary easing, has benefited Main Street. And some economists are very, very skeptical. Mikala Markusen, who's a global head of economics at Societe Generale, says, "We no longer believe that QE can fix everything." And Amir Sufi was a professor at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. And he says the central banks have failed because they haven't taken into account the fact that people behave differently under the same policy. And he cites two papers that show when rates fall in the U.S., households with higher debt burdens, usually the poor or less well-off, are more likely to spend. For every dollar rise in home values, for example, the poor households borrow and spend 25 cents. But the richest 10% don't do anything. They don't borrow money. So all this does is perpetuate the cycle of debt for the people who can least afford it. And that increases the risk to the financial system. And in a working paper for the National Bureau of Economic Research, a group of researchers looked at 8.5 million credit card accounts, and they found that for every 1% point reduction in interest rates, banks extended $127 in credit to families with credit scores below $660. And those families spent 58 cents of that $127. Okay? They used 57% of that credit. Well, under the same conditions, families with credit scores above 740, meaning rock-solid borrowers, got $2,200 in extra credit. But guess what? They didn't spend any of it. They didn't use that credit. So the credit expansion that happens because of lower interest rates goes to the wrong people, making the financial system more risky. And the people that probably are less capable of handling more debt, they're the ones that use it. So clearly, this is not a good strategy. It's not going to help the economy. It hasn't helped Main Street. And whatever Ben Bernanke or whatever Yellen does, its desired effects on the economy are going to be difficult to measure. And the measurements that have been taken show that QE, lower interest rates, is not effective anymore. It's bad for the financial system. And all it does is overinflate asset prices. And it gives that improves the lives of the top earners and the people that own assets in this country, but it doesn't help Main Street. In fact, it probably hurts them in the long run. Now our hour is up. Thank you for being here, spending this time with us. If you have a money topic you'd like to hear discussed, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Justin button. If you have a question you want answered on InvestTalk, call our 24-hour listener line. It is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Call that number, ask your question, we will answer it on the next program. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.